Everyone has heard of preventive medicine. What is it? And what does it mean for each of us in terms of taking care of ourselves, healthy or not? That's a subject this week on Reality Check with Carolyn Lepore-Duke. She's an RN specializing in health and wellness and recently come to our little community. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lee.
Glad to have you here. And I wonder if we could start by just maybe going a little bit over what brought you to wanting to specialize in health and wellness. What's your background that brought you here?
Well, thank you for asking me that question. So my background is in nursing. I worked in hospitals, anywhere from critical care to high-risk obstetrics to medical surgical floor to chemical dependency. I was a director of nursing and chemical dependency. And what I noticed in healthcare, for me anyway, was that I had no problem taking care of the patient, but the patient was already ill, already in the throes of the disease process. So I decided that I wanted to look at a broader scope, a broader brush in nursing, and decided that I would go back to school and work towards a degree in health and wellness. My mantra, for lack of a better thought, is that I believe that self-care and the ability to care for ourselves before we develop any type of chronic disease process is one of the better avenues. So I stayed in the hospital nursing for quite a long time, but like I said before, the person was already ill. So my approach and what I wanted to do was go back to school so that I could actually take care and support someone into garnering a better health and hopefully avoid some of the chronic disease processes that we are having in this day and age.
So your approach is, I guess, kind of an educational model. You like to teach people the ins and outs of taking really good care of themselves to whatever degree they're willing to do that.
Yes, I think what we're seeing, and we're seeing healthcare slowly going to this concept, is not only the ability for self-care, being able to be your own advocate so that when you do go to the doctor's office, you have done some research into knowing exactly about the condition that you may be or may not be diagnosed with, having that information. But also we're looking in healthcare is that we're getting into individualized care. So instead of just putting one treatment for all, we're looking at the person as an individual. So we're looking at all aspects of the individual in order to treat them. And I find that fascinating. I think we need to look at that.
So that would be more of an interdisciplinary approach rather than being sent to this specialist or that specialist, but bringing kind of a team together to look at the body as a whole and maybe what the source of the problem is rather than treating symptoms?
Yes, I think that that is absolutely correct. But I also think that if we look even broader, if you look at the medical model nowadays, the medical model is about sick care. What we are looking at, many of us who are in that thought process, we're looking at well care. What do we do in our day-to-day lives to help us avoid some of the chronic disease processes that are occurring in this day and age? And so part of that aspect is to take the whole individual and look at exactly what they're doing to help themselves stay well. And that's one of the things that we're looking at is our stress levels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Kind of like we've got two different threads going here. What is what you do if you get diagnosed with something that's ugly? And the other thing is, what do you do in daily life before you get there so you don't get there? And stress sounds like it's a big part of it.
Well, latest research indicates that, depending on what research articles you're looking at, anywhere from 40 to 50% of the United States population is seeing a major increase in stress within the last 5 years. There's many factors to that.
Like what?
Well, we have a political climate that has gotten people extremely stressed out. We are seeing people more and more with anxiety and depression. We're seeing more and more people doing a lot more self-medicating because of the stress that they're having in their lives.
Pharmaceutical or otherwise,
exactly, Lee. And the other thing that we're looking at is also the stress level of housing, our stress level with being able to maintain employment without worries that we may get furloughed, like just recently what happened in the government. There's a lot of different aspects of the stressors that are hitting people, and that stress is also one of the components that can create some of our chronic conditions that we have today.
Yeah, there's just a lot of pressure on the middle class. It's starting to get to be a very small group of people that can call themselves middle class anymore. And
absolutely,
without getting off into that political stuff, you know, our town is very politically active.
Yes.
I think it's something like 87% of us vote. It's one of the highest rates in the country. So people are very caught up in that discussion, no matter which side of the ledger you're on. And then there's other things like social isolation that I think is getting to be more of an issue now than it used to be, too. We used to have really close-knit communities and close-knit families, and that can be a problem in and of itself, too. But I think now people feel like they're so much on their own.
And that's exactly correct. I will give you just a little scenario. I've come from California. I was from Northern California, Santa Rosa, California. But one day I was at a little shopping center, and I saw two young people, young girls, on their phones, and they were texting. And for some reason, I felt compelled to ask them if they were texting each other. Now, mind you, they were sitting next to each other. And I went up to them and asked them, you know, are you texting each other? And they actually were. So we have gotten to a point where our technology, which I think is great, but on the other hand, we are further isolating ourselves without being able to have that ability to be able to talk one-on-one with one another without using a device. And I think what's sad is when we use Facebook as our only alternative to reach out and have a sense of community. I think we really need to be able to get back to that sense of being able to be with somebody one-on-one like I am today in speaking with Lee and all of you today. And in the sense of reaching out and being more available than using our technology as a form of communication.
You know, I had a similar experience. This was a while back, and I had a foster child, and he invited him to have a few friends over. And there was, I don't know, four or six of them in the room. I walked in to say hi, and they had the music turned up to, you know, 5 bazillion decibels, and you couldn't hear yourself think, but each one of them had their cell phone, and they were all texting, and nobody was talking to each other. I was like, this is very bizarre.
Yes.
It's supposed to make us easier to connect, and yet it seems to do just the opposite a lot of the time.
Well, just recently I finished reading a book by Johann Hari, the last name H-A-R-I. The book was about the United States being so completely disconnected. The book talked about our dependency on our devices that we're using, and our inability to even know our neighbors, that people will come home from work, they may, you know, tip their hand a little, you know, in a waving motion, but we don't even know our neighbors. And
it's really true.
One of the things that, you know, I realized was coming from 185,000 people in Santa Rosa, California, to Brookings, which is about, 6,500, roughly, what I sensed was that you could walk down the street and oftentimes people would actually say hello, or you would be in the store and someone would greet you. Where I came from, we were in a very fast-paced community. We're 42 miles from San Francisco, and you really didn't have that time. Just knowing your neighbors, that sense of community that people really wanted, they craved it, but didn't seem like they had time for it. So I think that also is a stressor of people just feeling very isolated.
I think so, too. I think, though, that in Brookings we do have more opportunity. It's just the culture to be closer knit than in an anonymous, larger town. But we have to remember to do that because we can get caught up just as much as anybody else.
Well, and I think what's important with that, when we were talking about people in stressful lives, we don't really know what they're dealing with.
Exactly.
We don't know that when we say thank you for bagging our groceries, what exactly the cashier's day has been.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what they're experiencing at home. What are the issues that are going on with them?
Right.
How many times do we say thank you in the course of a day for somebody helping us? What do we say to people that are or we're thankful, like when we're preparing our food, who grew our crops? I mean,
yeah.
We can get that significant into understanding that when we're preparing our food, somebody was out in the field picking those vegetables or tending to the farm or whatever in which we're getting our produce. And so I think that one of the things that we could possibly do as individuals, because we're always asking ourselves what we could do to make the world a better place, is maybe helping somebody, and we don't even know it, by reducing their stress, but just being gracious and thankful for what they've done for us that particular day.
Yeah.
Especially your servers at the restaurants. I mean, how many times do you actually thank them for taking the time out to bring you their meal? You never know what's going on in their personal lives.
I think that's one of the things that I struggle with, and I have a very busy life like everybody else, I suppose, and I need to always, you know, find a way to slow down enough to really take in the person in front of me and really kind of, you know, be present with them. And even a small contact like that, it's helpful to them, I think, but it's also helpful to me to just get present. And that's one of the things I think we can do to reduce stress. How about some other suggestions?
Well, I think the other thing that's very confusing, and that's a stressor in itself, is that we're bombarded with the latest and greatest, what you should do, what you shouldn't do in regards to your health, especially with diet and your nutrition. You know, some camps say, well, you know, let's be, you know, incorporate more fruits and vegetables, less red meat. Then your other camps are saying high protein, low carbohydrate. The confusion is making us stressed out. Is like exactly what is it that we need to do to try to be healthier? And the basics, if you just look at just basic, is just even looking at our portions. Just looking at maybe portion control, instead of pointing our fingers on who's eating what, looking at portions, looking at the way we eat, are we eating on the run, can we slow it down a little tiny bit? And I think one of the biggest things that's a problem with the way that we eat is that all our celebrations in the United States are centered around food.
Oh, yeah.
If we go to a bridal shower, it's about food, not just the bride-to-be. If we go to, you know, unfortunately, even a funeral, it's centered after the service or celebration of life, centered around food. If we go to a conference, it's always centered around not just the person speaking, it's centered around the food. So and we are really a society that do all of our celebrations that we have are all centered around food.
And so, not necessarily the best food either.
Not necessarily the best food.
We consume so much sugar. I keep hearing that different statistics that just make me shocked. That 80% of what's in the supermarket has sugar in it.
Yes.
80%.
And one of the things that we really don't realize is when we look at our food sources that aren't natural, that haven't come from nature, that's one of the things we have to look at. We, as the human animal, we were hunters and gatherers. We weren't going, you know, to the local store and picking up something that had been processed in a factory. So we have to really look at going back to what nature intended us to eat. And so we have to be advocates of our health by looking, if we are going to eat something processed, one of the things that you want to really be looking at, if nothing else besides the salt, the sugar, excess salt and, you know, sodium and sugar, is high fructose corn syrup. It is one of the worst. And what happened is you've got these companies going, you know what, we could save a couple dollars here. And the way we could save a couple dollars here is forget natural sugars. We're going to invent and create high fructose corn syrup, which now we're looking at is causing all kinds of chronic disease processes. We're even doing an early research in some different venues looking at ADHD in children from high fructose corn syrup. So here we are, a society that is progressing in so many ways, and now we're adding these artificial ingredients and chemicals to our diet, causing us and our bodies to be, you know, just havoc with all kinds of different disease processes. So it is very, very important that we not only become advocates when we go to the doctor's office, but we need to be advocates when we go to the grocery store. And what exactly are we doing and ingesting into our system that's causing us to become ill?
Yeah, read those labels, huh?
Please read the labels.
So talking about nutrition, I could you connect the dots a little bit about why sugar is harmful for us in all its various forms?
Well, part of my backstory is I was an adjunct professor at the junior college in nursing and health-related occupations. So I don't want to lose people in getting too into the molecular aspect of it. But to answer your question, the brain cannot discern. It has pleasure mechanisms in the brain. It can't discern one chemical from another. It just knows that the certain particular chemical stimulates the brain sensors. When it does that, the whole idea of sugar and natural sugars are fine if you find them in your fruits and your vegetables. Now, mind you, I'm not talking about a diabetic who needs to be very mindful of how much even natural sugar they're ingesting and taking in. I'm just talking just a broad brush here. So the brain does not know the difference. All it knows is it likes that chemical.
Right.
And when we ingest too much sugar, it alters our metabolism, especially with the insulin and the sugar levels in our bloodstream. So we get too much sugar in our bloodstream, and it can cause many problems. One of the problems that we look at is weight gain. We can have start to gain weight. We can also put a lot of pressure on our pancreas to keep secreting more insulin to compensate for the amount of sugar that's in our bloodstream. The level of sugar that the average American is consuming, they don't even know that they're consuming, is way more than sometimes the body can even handle. So in some doctors will say we're actually blowing our pancreas out. We're causing it to basically stop functioning correctly, and now we're having an epidemic of type 2 diabetes that we never did before. In some of my back experiences in the past, we've seen children as young as 4, 5, 6 years old that are not only having high levels and becoming diabetic, but we're also seeing them with cardiovascular disease. We're just really at epidemic proportions with the amount of sugar, unbeknownst to us sometimes, because it's hidden everywhere.
Right.
You know, in foods. So one of the things that we try to advocate toward is to try to see if we can go less with processed food and more with the natural food that nature was intended for us to consume.
So I think one of the things I've read about is that we get insulin resistant because the cells don't want all that insulin on the inside. So that creates more of a need to you know, eat more sugar, and it's kind of this vicious cycle that goes on that actually gives us those cravings, and in the meanwhile, it sets us up for, I mean, type 2 diabetes is so horrible. People get amputations, they lose their eyesight, they go blind. I mean, it's a long list of horrible things that happens, and it's huge. I don't know what the statistics are, but it's like everybody ends up with it sooner or later with our diet.
It's epidemic. I think the thing that I want everyone to kind of realize about processed food, and I want us to really look at that in a very humane, sensitive way, is when we see people that might be big. I don't really particularly like to use the word obesity because I think, again, it's a very strong label.
Yeah.
I know the medical community was coming out with having non-medical people be certified as obesity specialists. Mm-hmm. I think just by the nature of that, we've labeled a group of people who are struggling with their weight, and we're calling for obese specialists to help them. I think what we need to look at is when we eat processed food, and I'll give an example of, let's look at pizza, kind of the American standard of food. When we are eating pizza, oftentimes when we eat that slice of pizza, we're still hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is that? We're basically starving. Our cells are craving good nutrient food, dense food, good, healthy, natural food. But by eating processed food, we're overeating. So it's not just one slice of pizza. It's the second slice, and maybe the third slice, and maybe even the fourth slice, because the body is still really hungry.
For nutrients.
For nutrients, exactly. So when we look at someone who goes, well, you know, if they just controlled what they eat, let's be sensitive to know that that person that may be carrying a little extra weight might be carrying it because their body is actually almost in a starving state. It's actually hungry. And that weight gain is from the processed food that the body can't break down versus if they were able to have more nutritious foods to eat. And let me say that I am not a perfect person. As much as I really get regimented in my diet and I try to stay physically active, I will tell you, I've been to conferences and different events where there's nothing to eat. And so if there's processed food there, I'm going to eat it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not saying that I'm definitely void of being involved in that. But I want us to be sensitive to a population of people who are seriously struggling with their weight. And let's stop putting on them that they have control over it, because again, the brain wants what the brain wants. And so because there's chemicals in processed food, the brain trying to defeat what the brain wants is extremely difficult to do. We can't do that. And it's very, very difficult. It goes with any type of issue, whether it's food addiction, drug addiction, anything. So when we are looking at people, well, they can get off drugs if they wanted to. The brain is a very powerful, powerful organ, and it's extremely difficult for many, many people to be able to not be addicted to something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, you have to look at the underlying issues with addiction, too, that, you know, the people are medicating, whether it's pharmaceutically. Like 40% of people, I believe, are taking prescribed drugs that are mood-altering in the United States. What does that say about us as a culture? Oh, my gosh.
Well, and I think, Lee, just to tap on that a little bit, the latest, the studies are also indicating we're self-medicating just to make it through the day. And if you look, I mean, and it's very troubling. I always get very emotional when I see the suicide rates. We're seeing quite a
epidemic.
Few of them. It's an epidemic proportion. People we're seeing with more anxiety, more depression, and the way out for them, unfortunately, in their thought processes, is to end their life. I mean, we need to be, as a society, more compassionate, again, to not knowing what people are really dealing with. They just had a suicide in San Francisco, California. She was a young dietitian, had on the outside, the world was her oyster. She was seemed to be enjoying her life. She had a great job, wonderful family and friends, and just recently ended her life. Very depressed, couldn't get out of the depression. The anxiety was riddling her. We really don't realize, as a society, as humans, just really how much stress and anxiety we really are experiencing. And I think, as a community, at least what I would like to do as a community is to be able to keep us connected, keep us focused, being mindful that even of difference of opinion, that all voices need to be heard. And I think that would be a help in some people having a sense of community, knowing that they're cared about.
And one of the things that I have heard several times from different folks that are really interested in that subject is that, you know, we have kind of a social hesitancy to ask somebody how they're really doing, even though we might feel concerned, and that might be all the difference, is to have someone say, no, really, how are you, if they think there's some problems there. And just knowing somebody else really cares can make the difference between somebody attempting suicide or not.
I think when we look at the United States as a very wealthy nation, why are we at the stress levels that we're at?
Exactly. Why?
What really is going on in a person's life that they feel that their only choice is to end it? Because as someone in the healthcare profession, all life is valuable. All life is worthy of having happiness and to be cared about and to be thought of as valued. And when we don't feel valued, we don't feel like we have a sense of purpose, I think we're seeing the stress levels go to the levels that we just discussed. Mm-hmm. And it concerns me greatly. I just recently did a speaking engagement at our local high school, and I had a couple of the students, when I was leaving, make a mention of feeling sad and unhappy. And when we're seeing our next generation struggling with being happy, and I know it's high school and everybody's about fitting in, but it's even deeper than that. We're seeing that sense of disconnect, which is, like I said, from the book from Joanne Hira, and the reason I keep mentioning it, it's an excellent book to read, that talks about that, our disconnect, our stress levels. And when we're stressed, unfortunately, what we do is we grab possibly the wrong type of food to eat, and sugar is one of those indicators, a high level of sugar, just to squelch it for a few moments, but then it returns with a vengeance. So I think that my goal, hopefully, to be a part of giving back to the community, is also to help. Why are we so stressed out, and what can we do? What can I do as a single person to help build community even better than it already is in Brookings?
So that's part of your vision personally, is
yes,
that you want to really assist people in whatever way you can, as far as being a wellness consultant, something of that nature?
Yes, I would. You know, I'm new to the area. I'm only about 3.5-4 months to the area here. I came from a little over 185,000 people to a small community. I needed to slow down a little bit. I was on the fast track. of driving back and forth to San Francisco, 2.5 hours one way.
I used to do that too. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And 3 hours home, depending on whether or not there was a fender bender or something going on. And I just needed that slower pace for myself. The other thing that I liked about being here is the diversity. We had a diverse population in Santa Rosa, but Santa Rosa has become a commuter destination where people are basically, if you're going to work, San Francisco is the avenue for most of the resources, Marin County, for most of the jobs for people to make a living. But even in Santa Rosa, we were seeing a disconnect. We were starting to get an influx of homeless that we hadn't seen before, and all the avenues that go with that. And all the, you know, even with the homeless situation, not to deviate too much from today's conversation, but, you know, there's a broad brush in why people are homeless. There isn't just one situation fits all. Many people are one paycheck from losing their home. There's a lot of different avenues and the stress of knowing whether or not they have a job tomorrow.
That was one of the things that really shocked me when we had the shutdown and all the federal employees got furloughed or what have you, and they ended up in food lines like in a week because they were so paycheck to paycheck. I mean, they didn't even have resources in their pantry, you know, to get through an extra week or two. It was amazing. And these are folks that I would assume are in the middle class, more or less. And there they were in those food lines. You know, I think we need to work towards a world where we have some kind of safety net for ourselves. I'm not talking about government-sponsored safety net necessarily, although that could be handy too, but we need to take care of each other to the point where we all feel like we can at least survive a couple of weeks without a paycheck. What kind of stress does a person live under who can't go farther than that? Well, what the financial folks say, they say you need to have, I believe, 6 months of financial support resources available to you in case of a layoff. If you've got a week, that's just going to be awful stressful.
Well, and I think that that's wonderful when you know that you have a secure position, but we have a great majority of working poor. And what I mean by working poor, they just don't have one job. Many of them have two, three jobs. Trying to have enough money for food, be able to pay their rent. I think what's, you know, very difficult for me to understand, again, we're living in the richest country in the world, why we have a situation where people have to worry about whether or not they can feed their families. I'm not trying to use a utopic situation. I mean, utopically, I would love everybody to have everything they needed and all of that kind of stuff. But when people are actually getting up every day and going to work, and they're not so sure that their rents aren't going to go up and that they're not going to lose their job, and there goes their health insurance, you talk about stress. I mean, and then also being able to go to the grocery store and be able to buy healthy and nutritious foods for their family without going, okay, do I pay for my food today or do I pay for my child's medication? What exactly am I doing? So I think that there are other factors in why people are stressed. And I also believe that chronic stress causes all kinds of different problems. And young women, single mothers, we're seeing an increase of breast cancers. We're seeing other cancers happening. And you see a single mother, she's working two or three jobs, trying to make ends meet. There's a lot of different things we need to be looking at.
I was just hearing that pregnant women in this country have now a greater risk than they used to of dying in childbirth. That's amazing. Along with our life expectancy going down in general, I mean, that says a lot about how our culture is just not working for us as well as it used to.
It isn't working for us. The other thing that we're seeing is a lot of prematurity. We're also seeing, you know, years and years ago, we used to think, well, you know, if somebody was, you know, 60, 70, 80 years old, depending on the lifestyle, we might see some heart disease issues. We're seeing heart disease and people having, going into, you know, having heart attacks, full cardiac arrest, those kinds of things. In the 30s and 40s, mm-hmm. the stress level with that. We're seeing blood pressure. We have a whole community of young men who are taking high blood pressure medication, and some of the side effect of high blood pressure medication is, other chronic conditions that they're experiencing at a young age. Erectile dysfunction for one of them. That's a side effect of some of the blood pressure medications. So, I mean, you know, we need to be looking at all these aspects of why people are so stressed out in what we call the country of the land of plenty. If it's the land of plenty, why are we so stressed out?
Yeah, exactly. So we've got a lot of the hated awfuls going on, and I totally agree with that. Let's talk about what can a person do to keep their stress level down and protect their health in the face of all of this? I mean, people talk about exercise, eating well, sleeping well. What would be on your list of the most accessible things for folks to do to take care of themselves?
What I'd really like to see, you know, I'm all for, you know, where I live, I see a lot of people running and exercising and doing different things. We have a few gyms, I believe, in the mm-hmm. neighborhood. I think if people just walked more, my biggest thing is if you could just, you know, if you're at the grocery store, maybe park a little further from the entrance. Mm-hmm. And if you're able, walk, you know, a little further to the front of the grocery store. I think just walking, you know, in Europe, they rarely, in a lot of areas of Europe, they rarely drive.
Yeah.
You see them walking everywhere. And it's not just the young. The older are walking, all of them. So I think, you know, instead of, you know, saying, well, okay, so you have to exercise so many minutes a day, so many days a week, da-da-da-da-da-da. If we just walked more, if we just used what our body was intended to was movement. Mm-hmm. And the thing that what happens to us is we get strapped in jobs sometimes where we're sitting, we're stationary, and our body really wasn't made for that. Our body
right.
was more of a mobile mechanism, and just walking. So my goal would be if we could just walk a little bit more, just start with small little steps. I mean, we're close to Harris Beach. There's some
yeah.
nice walking paths where you're not having to do a lot of cardiovascular. You could just walk a straight path, enjoy the beautiful scenery, and just get out and walk and be around nature. I mean, we're surrounded by nature, and just getting out and walking. So although everyone has their own idea, my biggest thing is not forcing somebody to do an exercise that they really don't want to do. A lot of people don't like to run. That's fine. A lot of people don't like ballet conditioning or Pilates or anything else like that. But they've got forms of yoga you can do, sitting. They've got some basic just stretching. If you look at, I think we can get our best example of exercise from our furry, wonderful animals. If we look at our dogs and cats, you see them stretching when they get up from a nap, when you see them rolling over and just stretching out their limbs. If we can get just a little bit of stretching and just some daily walking, and just it's just a few minutes a day, we have done so much for our body.
Yeah.
Just doing some basic things like that.
I think I read somewhere that people were beginning to think that intermittent movement was actually more useful than having one really intense session a day or five times a week or whatever
yes.
it is. So, yeah, walking that extra block from the end of the parking lot to the grocery store and back out again, and doing things like that throughout the day, take the stairs instead of the elevator. Not that we have a lot of elevators in this town, but
right.
that kind of thing.
Yes.
Or just doing your own housework.
Well, and the latest studies indicate that we were intensely working out. I mean, you work out for 1 hour, you know, and we are actually seeing the body become more aging cellular-wise than we were if we were doing intermittent or just doing just, you know, consistent walking and less overly strenuous exercise. Now, I know
that's another stressor too.
I know, yeah, and I know that people are going to get very upset with me going, oh, I just love my exercise. If it's working for you, please continue it. If it makes you feel good and you've got your endorphins going and it's making it feel positive, I want you to continue to do whatever works for you. I'm talking for the majority of people, not to force them into a particular exercise that they really don't want to do. If we could just do the walking and being with maybe some friends, and there's some walking groups. My neighbor, who's well into her 80s, I think she's 88, has a little walking group over by the harbor, and she gets together with them 3 times a week. They're able to communicate and talk with each other, catch up with each other, and still enjoy the art of mobility and walking.
Right.
And it's nice to see of any generation being able to be mobile, because being immobile and worrying about that just doesn't start when we're 70, 80, 90. This starts when we're young. Mm-hmm. This is a process, and our body wants desperately to exercise and move. It's what it was meant to be.
Well, and we're getting back to the possibility of different body types, that everybody's a little different. Some people, their bodies are really made for running, and it feels wonderful to
yes.
them. Other people feel like it's a horrible slog, and they're really uncomfortable the whole time.
Right.
That might be a message that's not for you. You
right.
know, I think listening to your body, not that sometimes you have to, you know, get through a few days of being uncomfortable with a thing before it starts to feel good, but if you've done a thing for a couple of weeks and it still feels like torture, it's probably not your thing.
Exactly. Being, you know, and forcing yourself into an exercise, a particular type of exercise that you really don't want to do, you won't be consistent. You won't do it. You'll start thinking of yourself as a failure. Well, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. But if we could just, like I said, move the car a little further from our activity that we're doing that day, or, you know, going grocery shopping or whatever it might be, and just walking a little further to the front entrance of wherever we're at, I think would be a very helpful situation. Absolutely.
So we've talked about eating, and we've talked about exercise. What about sleeping? I hear all the time that we're sleep deprived, and I imagine there's some consequences to that as well.
Well, the biggest thing that we're seeing now, some of the latest research is indicating that we need six or more hours of sleep. Now, some experts are indicating that we even need more than that. That, you know, 8 hours, 9 hours, even 10 hours would be good. My thought about sleep is whatever works for you, but there are reasons why we're laying awake at night. If we're very, very, very busy during the day, what happens is when we start to slow down, start to get into the evening and everything else, getting ready for our sleep, we have a tendency to start thinking. Mm-hmm. Our mind has a real tendency not to want to shut down. So one of the things that people advocate is get off of our technology, if we can, is get off of our technology at a reasonable hour, by at least 8 o'clock, even earlier in the evening, so that we're not caught up with that technology of keeping our brain, you know, running at 90 miles an hour, but to be able to slow us down for us to have peaceful sleep. Another thing is that people using some type of meditative music or listening to the ocean or that kind of device to kind of get us, our body, in the mode of sleep. If we don't have good restful sleep, we are aging, our cells are aging much more rapidly. We are more prone to chronic disease processes if we're not able to sleep and get enough restful sleep. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that was happening is we're going to bed too late.
Right.
We're too stimulated too late at night by our technology and things like that. So if we can slow that down earlier. The other practice, which is always a good practice too, is if we can, a lot of people like to go out in the evenings and have dinner, you know, come the weekend, we're all excited that we're off of work. So we'll go out and we'll have dinner at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. It takes the body a lot longer to metabolize the food, and that also, but with that slower metabolism as in the evening, it also causes us to gain weight. So although we like to go out in the evenings, eating meals later at night not only can cause weight gain, because as the evening progresses, our metabolism slows down, but also it takes longer for us and our minds to slow down to get into our REM sleep because of the fact that we're overly stimulated from eating, being out late, and stuff like that. And I'm not taking away from not being socially and going out with mm-hmm. with your friends and stuff like that, but just be mindful that when you do that, it does take a little while longer for us to get into restful state.
So talking about stress and sleep and all, it sounds like, you know, the trick is to be able to bring down those brain waves to the slower patterns of that you would get with maybe meditation, those kind of practices. And I know there's a lot of them that are really not that demanding. I mean, it sounds so esoteric and weird to be meditating for a lot of people, but basically all you have to do is go sit by yourself somewhere and not do anything. Just close your eyes and just watch your mind do what it does. And that's meditating. It's not rocket science, and yet that will help you to just unlax a bit.
A lot of people, I'm a student of meditation. I'm going back to school through the University of Maryland Medical School area to work toward a specialist degree as a meditation clinician. But what I will tell you is, people will say, oh, I can't do that. Unfortunately, we all have that monkey mind. It's just we're constantly all the time mm-hmm. thinking. And so some people cannot just be silent and meditate. They're thinking, oh, I got to go to the grocery store, I got to do this, I got to pick up my children, I got to do, you know, all these things. You can actually do walking meditation. You can actually, you know, while you're picking up your child at school, you could be walking to the front of the school and just be, you know, I'm grateful today, I'm feeling good today, and kind of get that mind in that sense of calmness. So it isn't, you know, it isn't that we all are going to be in the monastery as, you know, right. as a Tibetan monk. But we can start very slow. I do have people that I know, oh, I'm not going to meditate, I can't do it, I can't think like that, it just bothers me. But you can actually do walking meditations. You can do mm-hmm. that in your walks. It doesn't have to be complete silence. Some people like meditation music. Some people like listening to Tibetan chimes, whatever it might take. And I will tell you, I have a severe monkey mind, very difficult to sleep, constantly, I've got a lot of energy. I was constantly not able to be quiet. Even as a child, I was always very disruptive in school, unfortunately. But I went from 30 seconds to 30 minutes. It took a long time to do that, but I had to do it with music. I had to do it with meditative music, some Tibetan chimes, those sort of things to quiet me. The music helped me get centered. But it is a practice that we're looking at for ADHD in the children. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the area that I'd like to focus would be with children. And then also to help with anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. We're really seeing some real avenues of being able to quiet the mind.
As if you can just anchor that state as a resource you can go back to, if you start having disruptive thoughts, whatever, you can get into that quiet place that you've established for yourself over time. And it can be as simple as just following your breath. I'm breathing in now. I'm letting go of stress on the exhale, that kind of thing. And I find just doing that a couple of times during my day, if I can remember, just to take a moment, it can be 30 seconds, to let go of everything and just go inside and be quiet for a moment. And I can feel my stress levels just plummeting. It's very handy to just do that every so often.
What I'd like the audience to think about would be, if you can, is to wake up in the morning and just for a brief moment, sitting on the edge of the bed or laying down in bed or when you first get up, is to just close your eyes and ask yourself, what today am I grateful for? If you can just close your eyes and take a deep breath and just think, what am I grateful for today? Why? What is it today that I can do to support the people around me, the people I care about me, or maybe a stranger? But just if you could do that just for a second, there's your first start of meditation.
Yeah.
Your very first start of it. So.
Very nice. So yes. These are some of the things. Anything else off the top of your head that you would recommend people to think about in terms of self-care?
I think one of the things that I want people to do is to know that all of us are precious. I want you to think about that you are valued, you are valuable. I want you to think of what you might do that you're passionate about and go for it. And the other thing that I want you to do is I want you to realize that all of us, even if you don't know us, we're all struggling with something. We're all dealing with possibly something, and that we're all a part of this beautiful, wonderful universe. And I want you to first and foremost think about your very best friend. And when you think of your very best friend, I don't think about your friendships, but I want you to focus on who you think is your very, very, very best friend. And your answer should be, is your body. Your body and your mind is your very, very best friend. And if you can take care of that, if you can feel good about that, then you in turn can bring that out to others that you are around and be even a better person to other people, be a better mentor, and be a more caring person. But it must start with yourself. I want you, and I really, really hope that you think about yourself and your body as your very, very best friend, and what can you do to support it, nurture it, and care for it.
Well, that's really well said. I really appreciate that. I know in my own journey, if you will, I really had to go a long time before I realized that what I was doing is I was sacrificing myself, basically, by sacrificing self-care in the service of other things, whether it was getting ahead or taking care of other people or what have you. And ultimately, I can't do any of those things if I'm not well, if I'm not healthy and reasonably happy in with mm-hmm. my relationship with myself, which mm-hmm. means taking care of myself, then that none of that stuff's going to happen. And so it's been a real process, and I wouldn't be surprised if that isn't it for a lot of people. You talked about people feeling a failure because they didn't, you know, run a marathon or they didn't lose the weight they thought they should lose. And I think those kind of feelings come along with when you're not taking care of yourself. You're going to have those kind of negative feelings towards yourself. And then self-esteem is suffering. So it's all kind of tied together with that idea of actually taking the time to value yourself.
That's exactly correct, Lee. And I think that what we face with this explosion of sadness and depression and anxiety and our health, some of our health issues, not all, but some of our health issues, is that sense of not feeling valued. Mm-hmm. That is the biggest. And it's interesting, I see here the Humane Society, the volunteers walking the little pets, even in the rain, you see the little pets. And one day I said to the volunteer, I thanked him so much for doing that, for volunteering at the Humane Society and walking the little pet, the little animal. And he said, it helps me feel like I can be of value. And I took that day and I thought, wow, the art, the thought, the act of walking a little animal that has, you know, possibly been abused, given up, whatever. And that made him feel like he was important. Mm-hmm. It's such a wonderful thing. I just want people to really know that they are valued and that they are important, and to reach out and to give.
Absolutely. So we're just about at the end of our time. Any last thoughts you want to leave with our listeners?
Well, I want to thank you today for having me. It's been an absolute honor. I'm very grateful to be here today. What I want to leave people with today is to do the best that you possibly can to honor yourself, to think about self-care, to arm yourself with enough knowledge and information that when you do go to the doctors, you can ask questions, you can search for answers, to have improve your quality of life. Health is extremely important, but we must look at the mechanisms of the whole aspect of us as an individual, as how we deal with our family dynamics, how we deal with our other relationships in life, and to realize that all of us are searching for answers. Even those of us in the healthcare community, we are searching and trying to find the best things that we can do to have a good quality of life for all of us.
So a lot of preventive medicine is really about taking responsibility upstream from having a huge problem. But at any point in our lives, whether we're sick or well, we can do that taking responsibility piece by doing our research, reaching out for other resources and inputs to help us make more informed decisions. And I really appreciate that about what you're saying and what you're trying to accomplish here.
Well, thank you very much. I think what I'd like to leave today is, when we talk about how do we make it a better world, I want us to start with a better respect for ourselves. I want us to start with being compassionate and understanding of ourselves, try not to label ourselves when we feel that we failed. I think the whole aspect of nurturing ourselves and caring for ourselves, in turn, then we can be better for our community and all the people that we cherish and care about. But please, please start with yourself first, because you are valued.
Well, that's a lovely note to end on. I want to thank you for being here. That's been Carolyn Lepore Duke, our guest, and this is Lee Tooley, your host. Pi White is our technical support and co-producer. And thank you very much for listening to Reality Check on KCIW.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.